From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, tensions between the U.S. and Turkey are growing. In an opinion piece in the New York Times on Friday, President Erdogan of Turkey said that America's unilateral actions against Turkey could drive the NATO ally into looking for new friends. Is that close to becoming a reality? What does this mean for Pastor Andrew Brunson and the future of our NATO ally? We'll talk about it with David Phillips, a foreign affairs expert and author of An Uncertain Ally, Turkey Under Erdogan's Dictatorship. And where there is prayer, there is opposition. But the Chino Valley United School Board is not backing down in their efforts to open their board meetings with prayer. They are not only seeking to prevail in prayer, they're seeking to prevail at the U.S. Supreme Court. Jack Hibbs, founder and senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, located in Southern California, will join us with the latest. And this story may shock you. A former pastor running for Congress has been accused by the media of preaching the Bible. We'll talk with Republican congressional candidate Mark Harris of North Carolina later in the show. And another bloody weekend in the war zone called Chicago. One dead, 27 wounded. Last weekend, at least 11 people were murdered and around 70 wounded. Are leaders in that city finally at a point of looking for real solutions? We'll talk with FRC's Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati. He knows something about the challenges that urban communities face. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, I want to thank Russ Jones for filling in last week as I took a little time off. And this week, we're actually today broadcasting in Cincinnati, Ohio. We've got a regional pastor's briefing coming up here in Cincinnati tomorrow. If you're a pastor and you're in within driving distance, well, check it out. WatchmanPastors.org. We'll save you a seat. All right. Turkey accused the United States of a stab in the back on Monday as its currency hit a new record low amid escalating tensions that have heightened an already dire economic crisis. The United States imposed sanctions over a number of issues, including the American pastor Andrew Brunson, who is being held. With us now is David Phillips. He is currently director of the Program on Peace Building and Rights at Human Rights at Columbia's University Institute for the Study of Human Rights. He's also worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and a senior advisor to the U.S. Department of State. David, I know you've been following Turkey for some time. You've written extensively about it. What do you see? Is this something new, this level of tension that we're seeing between the U.S. and Turkey?
It's the first time that a U.S. government has really reacted to Turkey's Islamist, anti-democratic, anti-American, and anti-NATO conduct. So it is something new. But these problems have existed in Turkey for some time. In addition to Pastor Brunson, there are now 50,000 political prisoners who have been jailed after the failed coup of July 2016. So Turkey has turned into a giant gulag. And since the coup, Erdogan has discovered his inner Stalin. He's really been cracking down hard.
Now, David, I know you're joining us from Paris, so I appreciate you joining us, especially given the time difference. The issue of Turkey, I mean, they've been a fairly reliable ally in NATO. I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, I actually trained with Turkish police officers as we were a part of the State Department's anti-terrorism assistance program. But under Erdogan, we've seen a move toward a more Islamist country. Closed to Western ideas and, in fact, hostile to many of the same values that once united us.
So when Erdogan was running with his Justice and Development Party, he served several months in jail for quoting an Islamist poem that the faithful are our soldiers, the minarets are bayonets. He was charged with using religion to incite social division. He also famously said after the elections in 2002, that democracy is like a streetcar. You get off when you reach your destination. So we've had early warnings that Erdogan was anti-democratic and Islamist. We just chose to ignore them. because we wanted Turkey to move forward and we wanted to strengthen our cooperation. Now, in 2018, we see Erdogan for how he truly is, and the Trump administration is adjusting its policy towards Turkey to reflect the reality.
So, David, what do you see as the most likely outcome? Obviously, Turkey's in a bind. Their economy, their currency taking a nosedive because of the, in part because of the sanctions. But as you said, they've got a lot of internal problems. What do you see as the most likely outcome?
Erdogan was just elected as president, so he's going to serve another 5 years. So there won't be a regime change at the ballot box. The Turks are deeply dismayed, firstly, at their economic collapse. It's now more than 6 Turkish lira to the dollar. When Turkey started its economic expansion, it was 2 to the dollar. The expansion was largely based on foreign borrowing. If international banks start to call in those notes, there's no way that Turkey has the liquidity or the hard currency balances to pay back the loans that have been taken out. So Turkey right now is teetering on a razor's edge. Turkish people who are very cosmopolitan, many of whom are very European, are dismayed that they have been turned into a pariah state. So Turks have to take it into their own hands to raise their voice in protest. It's hard to do, though, when you have a government which has zero tolerance for dissent and puts people in jail wholesale for being oppositionists to the Erdogan government.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, if you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. On Friday, the president of Turkey, President Erdogan, had an opinion piece in the New York Times, essentially telling America that if you keep pushing, we're going to fall into the arms of another. And with us now talking about this, David Phillips. He's the author of An Uncertain Ally, Turkey Under Erdogan's Dictatorship. David, so, I mean, we know that they've been looking at military, purchasing military hardware from Russia. Erdogan wasn't veiled in his threat that if the United States keeps pushing, that they will apparently move over and lock arms with Russia.
So Turkey, as a NATO ally, has ordered the acquisition of $2 billion worth of Russian S-400 surface-to-air missiles. It's one of the core principles of NATO, which is the interoperability of weapon systems. It's also embraced Islamism and turned its loyalties to Islamist governments in the Middle East, including in the Gulf states. So when Erdogan says that they'll look in another direction, he's just – Turkey already is a rogue state that has broken its commitments to NATO, broken its democratic commitments to the European Union, to which it aspires for membership, and to the United States, with whom it's had a strategic partnership since the Korean War. So right now the U.S.-Turkey relationship is in dire straits.
So do you see them remaining in NATO?
So there are very stringent conditions for getting into NATO, very stringent democracy conditions. But there are no conditions for evicting a NATO member. Nobody ever imagined that a NATO member would go rogue and abrogate its responsibilities to the alliance. So there is no clearly defined path for removing a NATO member. If Turkey wants to resign and leave NATO, continue its security cooperation with Russia and Iran, then that'll be Erdogan's choice. That'll be a major fissure in the alliance. It will require the United States to re-examine broader relationship with Turkey, which encompasses not just security cooperation, but economic and political measures as well. In Washington right now, there's a clamor for imposing additional sanctions on Turkey using the Global Magnitsky Act. If you want to get Erdogan's attention, the best way to do that is to look at the massive corruption of his son Bilal and his son-in-law Berat Albayrak. Those two have accumulated a fortune. If the U.S. is serious about sanctions and trying to change Turkey's behavior with a credible threat of sanctions, let's start looking at family members. The two ministers who have been sanctioned are meaningless to Erdogan. So we need a more robust policy that's closer to home.
So, David, when we look at what is unfolding here, as you've just talked about, the purchasing of the military hardware from Russia. In fact, that was noted in the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that was just signed by the president. That was, in part, I would say, the large most robust reason that the F-35 fighter jets were not sold to Russia, or at least it's been delayed. The other issue, Pastor Andrew Brunson, the evangelical pastor from North Carolina that's being held. How significant of an issue is Pastor Brunson in these, obviously publicly the tensions are there, but is that a part of the deeper conflict that's there with Turkey?
So the Pastor Brunson case is important. It exemplifies Turkey's practice of hostage diplomacy. They didn't arrest Pastor Brunson because he was cavorting with terrorists or conspiring against the state. They arrested him in order to hold him hostage and coerce the U.S. government into trading pastor for pastor. Fethullah Gulen, who is a Turkish pastor who lives in the Poconos, is accused by Erdogan of masterminding the coup, and the Turkish government has demanded his extradition. They've apparently supplied dozens and dozens of bankers' boxes of information. None of it rises to the level of an extradition decision. So this hostage diplomacy is just unsuitable between allies. And it's important to also recall that Pastor Brunson is one of tens of thousands of political prisoners. Mm-hmm. After the failed coup of July of 2016, Erdogan arrested 50,000 people and accused them of sympathizing with the Gulen movement or of supporting the PKK, the Kurdish terrorist group, the Kurdish group which is labeled a terrorist organization. In addition, 100,000 people were removed from their civil servant jobs as educators, judges, members of parliament. So what's happening in Turkey is the widespread and systematic abuse of human rights. Pastor Brunson's case has risen to the surface because it's so egregious, and it's gained the attention of the administration. But it's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, Turkey really has become a giant gulag where basic rights are denied, where under the veil of fighting terrorism, people are put in jail, and the key is thrown away.
He really did utilize the crisis of this coup attempt as a means of locking down power for himself in Turkey. David, we're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us again from Paris. Appreciate your insights into an issue that I think is only growing in its importance to the United States.
Mr. Perkins, thanks for your attention to this matter.
All right, David Phillips. To find out more and to check out a copy of his book, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, coming up next, a lawsuit in California over prayer at school board meetings is headed to the Supreme Court. We'll talk with Pastor Jack Hibbs, one of our Watchman pastors, when we come back. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as I mentioned, we are in Cincinnati, first part of this week. Tomorrow, hosting a regional Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing for pastors in this portion of Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, if they want to come up. If you're listening and you're a pastor, go to WatchmanPastors.org, WatchmanPastors.org. Go to TonyPerkins.com as well and follow the links over. We believe the pastors are the key to seeing communities turned around, which is what's required if we want to turn the country around. Well, joining us now is one of those pastors that we've been working with since Watchman began 15 years ago, and he's doing just that, helping turn around his community by preaching the Word of God and challenging his people to live out the Word of God. Pastor Jack Hibbs, founding pastor and senior pastor of Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Jack, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thank you much.
Well, last Wednesday night, the Chino Valley School Board, which happens to be populated in part by members of your congregation, voted to petition the United States Supreme Court to review the recent Ninth Circuit Court decision upholding a 2016 ruling that prohibits prayers and religious references from being said at school board meetings. And so the school board there is saying, you know what, we want to fight for our First Amendment freedom to open our school board meetings with prayer. And they're going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Tony, we're blessed and excited. That's exactly correct. And the beautiful thing about all this, and I think it's a great example by God's grace for other churches, is the fact that out of the five members of the school board, three of them are brothers and sisters in Christ. And so years ago, they heeded the call to get involved civically, publicly with their faith. And so you remember way back, Tony, when originally there was a movement in our community to stop prayer with our chaplaincy programs for fire and police. And over a decade ago, we started, you know, wearing shirts, thousands of shirts all around town saying, "I pray in Jesus' name." The mayor's office got a hold of us and said, "Hey, you know, come on, what's the deal?" And I said, "Well, either you guys need to reinstate prayer in Jesus' name, or, you know, we're just not going to participate in the chaplaincy program." That opened up the door, and from that time on, when we took that stand, The Bible, for example, after that was introduced to our public school system as a course, literally, in public school. And everything was just going great until the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Wisconsin saw what was happening. They relocated an office here in town and then began to take advantage of an Obama-era district, federal district judge that knew would side with them, which is part of their tactics now nationwide, find out where a liberal judge is presiding and stir it up. And so they thought that we were just going to go home, pack up our toys, and surrender this. And what happened was, Tony, when this ruling was made that the school board will not pray, the school board cannot reference, for example, a Bible verse encouraging the success of our kids or asking God to bless our year of education. Forbidden now. So the school board voted to not accept that district ruling and to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which we're delighted, Tony, to be heading in that direction now.
And how are parents responding to that? What are you hearing from the community?
Well, I can tell you, I could show you. The beautiful thing is the school board meetings have literally been packed out with hundreds of parents in support of this, where on the other side of the aisle, there's 10, 15 of those who are claiming to be atheists, and it's overwhelming. I mean, the support for our civic leaders when it comes to education to encourage the words of the Bible or prayer are so well received. But you've got to remember, we're in California here right now. Well, we're back,
I know.
Tony, you know, numerous friends. We've got a state right now that has sanctioned the California Comprehensive Sex Ed course, which is literal pornography. Friends, listen, I'm not kidding. It's pornography being introduced to public school children, and our school system in California thinks that that's safe. But Judge Bernal said that a child exposed to prayer or the hearing of prayer, it could be offensive to the point of affecting the child mentally. So you got to understand what we're dealing with here. Pornography for children in public school is okay. Prayer is not.
But and that's what that backdrop is what makes this actually, I think, so encouraging, mm-hmm. is that when you have all of this happening in California, everybody knows that California is, you know, off the deep end. And but there are these oases that exist there. Of believers who are standing in the face of such great hostility for prayer, for the Bible, for the rights of parents. And Jack, I think that should be encouraging to pastors everywhere. If they can do it in California, they can do it in Illinois, they can do it in Missouri, they can do it in Mississippi, they can do it anywhere.
You know, Tony, thanks for bringing that up. I was just on a phone call this morning about 2 hours ago with an organizer that has 700 pastors in California that have agreed to meet and to rally to address those that are running for office this November to vote a biblical worldview. We're not asking them to bow the knee and become Christians. We're asking them to represent a biblical worldview. Tony, I got to tell you, I've been born and raised in this state in Southern California. I'm filled with optimism. Come November, there's something going on in this state. I was told by Senator Mike Morrell that this is the first time that he knows of in our state's history where there are more born-again believers running for office in local, county, and state positions. Listen, for Attorney General, we're looking at Stephen Bailey, a born-again Christian who will be on the ballot in November. It's absolutely awesome what's happening out here, and it's no
well,
time to quit.
It all goes back to the pulpit, and I want to thank you for being faithful in that pulpit. Jack Hibbs, one of our Watchman pastors in California. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking with another pastor. This pastor's running for Congress, and he's been accused of something. I'll tell you about it on the other side of the break. Don't go away.
Thank you.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I know this is going to shock you, but the media has revealed that the former pastor, First Baptist Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, who's running for Congress, that when he was a pastor, brace yourself for this, okay? This is revealing stuff. He preached from the Bible. That's it. The media is, they have discovered something. And so they're making sure the world knows. Well, joining me now is the pastor himself, Pastor Mark Harris, who is running as a Republican nominee for a Republican candidate for a congressional seat in North Carolina. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, the media has apparently stumbled on something that somehow somebody must have missed, that as a pastor of First Baptist Church of Charlotte, that you preach from the Bible.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise to me that they were so shocked to find that to be the case. So I'm not sure what they were expecting to find in the sermons that they were evidently digging through, but I certainly, am thankful that they concluded the same thing that I was hoping to be accomplishing, and that was preaching the Bible.
I know, for a pastor, that's a great thing to be accused of actually preaching the Bible. but it speaks to something, Mark, that I think people need to realize, that increasingly the media is, totally oblivious to actually what happens in a church, in a country that's dominated by Christian faith. They're oblivious to that. And B, there is the underlying hostility toward it to suggest that someone who actually believes these things has no role in government.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're correct. I think if anything, we have seen the ignorance put on display by the media in these attacks, and it's obvious that there's a narrative here that they're trying to create, and ultimately it's obvious to your point that to somehow say that someone who would spend 30 years of his life, as I have, preaching and teaching the Bible and serving in that role as a pastor and speaking and teaching at my church each and every week, that somehow I would not be qualified to serve in government because of the things I believe. That's kind of scary, to be honest with you.
It is. I agree. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this, because we've had a long association. You've worked with us. You spearheaded the efforts in North Carolina when it came to both the marriage amendment. We were a key ally there, as well as the culture impact teams, community impact teams, which we have all across the state of North Carolina. And that is a, I hope people understand and realize the gravity of that, the what you just said, that there is this mindset that people who actually believe the Bible, who live according to the Bible, they either have to renounce that or they can't enter into the halls of government.
Exactly. That seems to be the message. And then you put on top of that the ignorance that is put on display. There was a political cartoon that showed up earlier in this very, I guess it was last week, that showed a picture of me as if I were a caveman with a club over my shoulder, standing in front of a woman who is dressed in a business suit. And it's got on her hashtag Me Too movement. And then they've got me with a little meme saying, give me that old time religion. And what I found fascinating is that was the result of them finding me preaching on Ephesians chapter 5,
right,
which dealt with the family, and to somehow think that the Me Too movement had anything to do with marriage. I mean, that was a slap at the Me Too movement, because the reality was, in the Me Too movement, many of those folks are women that have been sexually harassed at work. It had nothing to do with the relationship within the family of a husband and wife and a child. And yet they continue to see that in a very convoluted way.
Well, actually, the preaching of the strength of the family in Ephesians and the proper respect that a husband has for his wife and for his children, which is what you preached on, that is actually the solution to the Me Too movement. Because if you have a husband who loves his wife as Christ loved the church, he's not going to be out doing the kind of stuff that the Me Too movement talks about.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So it is. It is a very interesting turn. There's no doubt that my opponent and the left wing that has gotten behind him made the decision early on that this was going to be the mode of attack. I understand that other candidates like myself are being attacked on these similar issues. So it's what we're dealing with.
Well, Pastor Mark Harris, I would just encourage you to take one chapter ahead in Ephesians, where Paul talks about when you've done all that you could do, just keep standing because you're doing the right thing. So keep standing,
thank
my friend.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Pastor Mark Harris. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, another violent weekend in Chicago. Ken Blackwell joins us to talk about it. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to be back this week in the chair. Again, my thanks to Russ for filling in for me last week as I took a little time off. You know, I think it's healthy to step back from all of this and just do some normal things like clean out barns and stuff like that. But anyway, we're in Cincinnati this week. Tomorrow we'll be hosting a regional Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing. We'll have pastors from around the southwestern portion of Ohio. So if you happen to be in this area, even over in Indiana, feel free to come over and join us if you're a pastor. Go to watchmanpastors.org, and you can find out more information how to be a part of the growing network of pastors around this country that are standing on the walls of the nation. Again, that website, watchmanpastors.org. All right, Chicago, nothing new here, but they have a crisis on their hands. So far this year, more than 1,600 people have been shot, and only a small percentage of those crimes have been solved. In fact, in the single digits. The question is, after ranting against guns, in fact, I should mention, Chicago has the most stringent gun control laws in the country, but yet guns flow freely on the streets of Chicago. But is there evidence that maybe the leadership of that city has come to a realization that they need more than gun control? Joining us now is Ken Blackwell. He's a senior fellow for family empowerment and constitutional studies here at the Family Research Council, and he's the former mayor of Cincinnati and the Ohio Secretary of State. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be back.
Well, it's good to be back in Ohio and good to be with you here in the Queen City and partaking of some of the local cuisine like Skyline Chili, which is one of my favorites. Not so much in taking in the Reds. They're not doing so well, but didn't do so well, I should say, this year. I want to play this clip of Rahm Emanuel this weekend commenting on the increased violence that's taking place there in Chicago.
You can talk about the weather, but the weather didn't pull the trigger. And you can talk about jobs, and they count. But in parts of the city where there aren't jobs, people did not pull a trigger. There are values. There are too many guns on the street. Too many people with criminal records on the street, and there is a shortage of values about what is right, what is wrong, what is acceptable, what is condoned, and what is condemned. And we as a city, in every corner, have an accountability and a responsibility. If you know who did this, be a neighbor. Speak up. Neighbors, come together. The city will be with you shoulder to shoulder.
Well, Ken Blackwell, could Rahm Emanuel be stumbling upon something there where he says we're talking about values, that values are missing?
Absolutely, Tony. And it's ironic because Rahm has been he's been a drum major for relativism. He has been a foot soldier for those forces that have attacked and eroded the basic moral absolutes that have guided this nation through good and bad times. And so I guess, as you say, he's stumbled upon the truth because the violence is really starting to not only erode the confidence of the people that he serves, but it is actually starting to, you know, dawn on him that Chicago has become a lawless oasis, and as a consequence, it is having all kinds of impacts. And so, as you and I know, there are basic moral absolutes that are essential. And one of the things that we know, and he seems to be stumbling upon, is that the family is the incubator of liberty. It is where young people learn their values and their ethics, and he should have been in the forefront of saying we have to do something to protect, you know, the traditional family in our country, or we will pay a price.
But I wonder if Rahm's discovery is a little too late. When you look at a downward spiral of a city, and, you know, having headed up Cincinnati as the mayor of Cincinnati, there are so many factors that are affected by crime. I mean, at a certain point, not only are families afraid, but businesses are afraid to
absolutely.
Come to a city.
Well, look, a mayor and the leadership of a city, there are basics that they must attend to. And one of those basics is neighborhood safety. When that is eroded and lawlessness becomes the prevailing ruling force of the day, you see not only capital fleeing and people fleeing, but you see particularly people with money, families with money, going to neighborhoods that are safer and neighborhoods that have better schools. You know, so a city's leadership has to deliver on a quality education, safe neighborhoods, and a solid infrastructure. When you start steering away and veering away from delivering those basics, you will see a city that will lose population, lose economic muscle, and begin to just wither away.
Now, Ken Blackwell, is not Chicago a prime example of why gun control laws are not the solution to violence?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you in fact, and Rahm is making his sort of knee-jerk statements in the face of the facts. Here is the reality. There are over 300 million guns in America. Over 300 million. The fact of the matter is that the problem isn't those guns, because there are folks that have much more liberal gun laws than Chicago, who don't have nearly the problems of Chicago. What you have is a wanton attitude by gang members, thugs and those who have absolutely lost any contact with decency, who basically figure that they have a free hand, because Rahm has made excuses for him for such a long time, and he's blamed Gunn, he's blamed the NRA, he's blamed everyone, but the corporates that in fact create an environment for that sort of aggressiveness by the criminal element.
So let me ask you this, Kim Blackwell. I know it's been a number of years since you were mayor of Cincinnati, but you've continued on in politics. You held the Secretary of State, Treasurer's post in Ohio. You remain very much involved, literally internationally, with places that are in crisis. What would be the first three steps that you would recommend that, whether it's Rahm or someone else that comes in, because they've got an election coming up in 6 months, what would be the three steps you would recommend to pull Chicago out of this death spiral?
First, I think he has to say we have to reestablish Chicago as a place where people don't have to get up every morning wondering if this is going to be their last day on Earth. And the only way he's going to do that is by securing a law enforcement team that is committed to creating order and safety. And he has to be in the forefront of bridging whatever divide there is between those law enforcement officials and the places that they serve. But first, if I was in his situation, and I did it every time there was a crisis in the city of Cincinnati, I would call the faith community. Because in the final analysis, you're never going to be able to have enough police officers to, in fact, bring that sort of stability and safety if you don't have human beings, individuals, and families committed to safety in their neighborhoods and in cooperation with those law enforcement officials. You can't put a police
right.
officer on every corner. That's
right.
what I would do. I would understand that we have to communicate to our people that there's a higher authority that is the source of order, and we have to get back to that fundamental understanding. That big government isn't going to be able to do it by himself. It's going to take committed citizens, families, fathers and mothers, principals and teachers, preachers, you name it, that are reading from the same, singing from the same hymnal.
And that's what's missing, as some have been pushed out of that process, and government has become the really seen as the cure-all for everything.
They've chased God and faith out of the public square, and they've replaced it with government. And any time that government becomes God, you know that they have the wrong G. And it isn't the capital G.
That's right. It's a little G, but becomes a big G in terms of its oppressiveness.
Yeah.
Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, a school board being challenged because not the school. OK, I mean, that was taken away back in 1963. 62 was, I think, the Bible taken out of school. 63, prayer was taken out of our schools. Now, school boards can't even open their sessions to pray without being challenged. You know, and people wonder why we have the trouble we have in our schools. I was just talking with a friend of mine here in Cincinnati, who is higher echelon at one of the police departments, about to retire, been there about 30 years. Said he was over at one of the main high schools in the Cincinnati area, and he said that he was shocked at how the kids just disrespect the authority of teachers and principals, just completely ignoring the instructions that they're given. I mean, when you have a breakdown of the home, and we've seen that, you have a breakdown in society, as we see in the schools, we see in the broader culture. total disrespect, lawlessness. I mean, we've seen that at the highest levels of government on display in the last administration, and continuing as we see in the ranks of some within our government. It goes back to the very basic fundamentals that there is a God, and we're all accountable to Him. And when you remove God from the equation and you allow people to set up their own standard of right and wrong, this is what happens. And again, I go back to George Washington and his farewell address to the nation when in 1796 he published this letter giving his encouragement, his direction to the nation in terms of how to both protect the young republic and see it prosper into the future. And he talked about the pillars of this experiment in self-government. And he talked about religion and morality. He said, look, let me caution you. Don't think that you can have morality without religion. And see, that's where we have been the last 50 years as we pushed God, religion, from the public square and suggested that we could somehow have a public morality. We're now finding that there's no foundation for it. So how do we get it back? Well, one, we bring it back into our own lives, making sure that we live accountable to God. We teach our children in the home to be accountable to God and those that He's placed in authority. And we work to bring that back into the broader culture, that we do not shrink back from an understanding that there is true truth, there is a moral standard, and despite what the media might say, despite what the left may do, we should not shrink back from this. You know, we should be like Pastor Jack Hibbs and Calvary Chapel Chino Hills that took on the school board and actually got members of their church elected to the school board and are standing firm for those fundamental rights that we have as Americans, that first freedom, the freedom of religion. And folks, we lose those things if we don't use them. And we need to be willing to use those even in the face of opposition. Well, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. And let me encourage you again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back again tomorrow, Lord willing. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.